Chav Gimel Amid Aleph, 8 lines down, the second word on the line where it says Rava Amar.
Amar continues back to the issue of burning the incense on the coals. Apparently he's referring to when you want to burn the incense there to introduce the fragrance into the fruits, which Shmuel above said is permitted, as opposed to Rav who said it's prohibited. So Rava weighs in on that, continuing from what we just mentioned, that according to one opinion at least, you could put it for sure on cheres, you could put the incense on heated up earthenware. Rava says, Agavi gecheles nami, you may even put the incense on top of actual coals, mutza, that's also permitted, just like Shmuel said, because in this view, introducing the fragrance into the fruits is like a shava b'chol nefesh kind of thing. It's something that everyone would at least want to enjoy, and therefore, even though there are malachas involved, as we explained, but it's still okay. Midi dehavi abisra gomri. Just like everyone would agree that to take some meat and roast it on coals and yom tov is permitted as it is serving a yom tov need, so too, Rav agrees with Shmuel, this is a legitimate yom tov need to put the fragrance into the fruits, so it's not a problem to put those on the coals on yom tov. Mark continues with Darsh Rav Gevia mi bekhasila pischa de berishkalusa. So Rav Gevia expounded as follows: Keturah shari. Keturah, we'll leave that untranslated for now, is permitted. Because the question is going to be, what was he referring to when he said this word keturah? There's two possibilities. Amalei Amemar. Amemar asked, my keturah, what was Rav Gevia referring to when he mentions that keturah is permitted on Yom Tov? If you meant by this, I keturah biyadei. If he's using the word keturah in the sense of tying something, like into a knot, and he's referring to like pressing clothing on Yom Tov, where apparently they would tie the clothes in a knot around some kind of flat board to press the clothing. So that's what he's saying is permitted on Yom Tov. So Meir says, but it can't be. Maisa umenu. Surely that's a professional act of labor. You're tying it into a knot on the press. So that's not permitted on Yom Tov. It's not the ochel nefesh need. He couldn't have meant that. So ve'i la'ashen, if he's saying that's permitted to, in the case we discussed above, to produce the fragrance from the incense, to introduce into the fruits, that too, how could he say that's permitted? Aser, it's prohibited. Daka machaba, you're doing the malach of extinguishing. We mentioned also above, you're kindling the incense. So what did Rabbi Gevia mean? Amaleir of Asher, Vashi explained, the Olam la'ashin, he did mean, like your second possibility, he was permitting burning the incense to produce the fragrance, put that smell in the fruits, and it's permitted. And he says it just the same way Rava argued it. It's just like roasting some meat on coals and Yom Tov, which we can all agree is permitted. This too is legitimate. Tzarech ochel nefesh is therefore not a problem. Ikid the army is another version of how this last discussion went. That Amalei Amemar started out once again. My keturah. What did Rabbi Gevia mean by the word keturah? Iketurah midei, if he meant tying the clothes to press them, that's not permitted. Maisa umenu, that's a malacha, you're tying the clothes there. Ila Hashem, if he meant to smoke the fruits, aser, that should be aser. That should be a problem. Now here's where this version is different. The Kamolid Rechi says, because even if you could get past the fact that it's a malacha, you'll say it's rochel nefesh, but still, there's a different issue that you're introducing the scent, whether it's into the earthenware, if you're using that, or if you're using coals, like you're making the scent into the coals. So therefore, it should still be a problem. Our answer is Amar Ravashi. So Ravashi answered his question. Anna Amrisa Niale. In this version, Ravashi explains, I myself taught Rav Gevia this halacha, so I'm certainly an authority to explain what the halacha is saying over here. The Olam Le'ashen, he is saying that it's permitted to smoke the fruits. This is the halacha that I taught him. As to the issue you're bringing up, that you're introducing a new scent into the coals or the earthenware, it says, we don't have any objection even to the biblical malacha that's happening when you're roasting the meat on the coals, say the fact that they're getting extinguished, besides the cooking of the meat. So in other words, you don't have to worry about any of the malachas that are going on if it's an act that's ochel nefesh. So then you don't have a problem. So too, by smoking the fruits, this in this position is considered for ochel nefesh need, and therefore it's not a problem that you're doing malachas, you're doing molid, introducing the new smell, it is permitted nonetheless. The Mishnah then told us that Rabbi Gamliel had a third position that was against the Chachamim as regards preparing a goat the same way the Karban Pesach would have been prepared, in terms of the way it was roasted on open flame with the entrails next to it. And Leo's position is that you could do that, even though, of course, we don't bring Karban Pesach, but to commemorate Karban Pesach, you could, in the manner of cooking at least, prepare a kid goat in the same way they would in the Beis HaMikdash. Whereas the Chacham objected to this, said, no, can't do that, because you might lead people to think that you can bring karbanas today, which of course is very incorrect. If a person brings a karban outside the Beis HaMikdash, it's chayv, a serious prohibition of shchut echutz, it's a chiv kares. So therefore we can't even do something which may give the impression to somebody that we're bringing a karban not in the Beis HaMikdash. So the Gemara brings about this Tanya. It says in the Brayso, Rabbi Yossi Omer, Yossi said that Todos Ish Romi, he was a very prestigious person in government connections. He was highly regarded in the different circles. He was Hinni against B'nai Romi. He was a Yiddish person. He was a Jewish man. And he started a practice amongst the fellow Roman Jews, Lechel Gedi Makulis B'Leile Psachim, to do like Rabbi Gamliel, to have the gediyah set up with the entrails next to it over the open fire. So he thought this was a very nice minhag to commemorate the way it was prepared in the time of the Beis HaMikdash. Shalchu lei, the Rabbanan sent to Titus the following message, Yomalei Titus Hatal. Not for the fact that your name carries a lot of weight, you have a lot of connections, you have a lot of power. If you were not the highly regarded Titus, Gaizranu Allah Nidoi, we would have excommunicated you. She'ata machalas b'nei Yisrael kachim b'chutz. Because by doing this, you're feeding kachim sacrifices to b'nei Yisrael outside the Beis HaMikdash, which, as we said, is a serious offense. And Gemara says, what do they mean by that? Kachim sagadaitach. Are they suggesting literally that Titus was feeding them kachim? He, of course, wasn't. He was just commemorating the way the carbon was prepared then, but he wasn't actually telling people to bring a carbon. No one says that's okay. It meant by it that you're doing something which is borderline. It looks like the carbon is being brought. That's a problem according to the Chacham, and this is the halacha. You can't prepare the kid goat the way it was in the Beis HaMikdash unless people think that you could bring kachim outside of the Beis HaMikdash. And therefore, we have the Gemara Psachim, which tells us that you have halachas, even that when purchasing meat for the holiday of Pesach, you shouldn't say, like, this is for Pesach. Because again, you're giving the appearance that you're actually preparing, like, the carbon Pesach today, which is totally not allowed, and therefore that has to be avoided. Next Mishnah says, Shlosha Devarim, Rabbi Elozer ben Azariah, Matir, V'chachamim, Osrim. The following three things, Eliezer took the lenient position. He said it was permitted. Chacham said, not permitted. And there as follows. First, a halacha that's relevant to Shabbos, Parosai, the par, it sounds like Mishnah is saying, the cow, Rabbi Elozer ben Azariah, like he had his one cow, he conducted himself that it was Yotzu Bertsua Shebein Karna, that it would be allowed to go out to Rosh Hashanah with a strap between its horns. The point here is that in Elazar ben Azariah's opinion, it's not considered an act of carrying. Even your animals can't do work on Shabbos. Yet Elazar ben Azariah held the animal here isn't carrying something from one domain to another, which would be a malacha. Because we say it's a tachshin, it's an adornment to the animal, it's wearing it. Of course, there's no problem with wearing clothing from one domain to another. It's only when you're carrying a burden, a masoi, as a Azariah hold, this is not a burden, it's something the animal is wearing, so it's fine. Makardin is a behemoth b'yomtiv. So Azariah was also lenient that he allowed combing the animal, like combing its hair with a certain kind of like a metal comb with thin teeth, the Gemara will explain. He said it's fine, even though you could argue it might cause bleeding. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah holds that the likelihood of that and the fact you don't have intention for it makes it permitted. The Gemara will talk about that more. Further, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was lenient to be shochkin as a pilpulin berichayim shalahen. to go ahead and grind up peppers in their mill, like the typical thing used to grind them. He holds that the malacha here of tochin, grinding, is not an issue in Yom Tov. You could do that for like any ochel nefesh needs. Now Yehuda Omer, Yehuda says, as far as the combing the animal's hair with that certain type of comb there, ein mekard nesbeim of Yom Tov, you can't do it. Because you have a real likelihood you'll create a chabura, you'll open a wound in the animal, which is a malacha. Drawing blood from any living being is a malacha based on the act of shchit. That's in the category of slaughtering an animal, so we say drawing blood from living being is part of that category of slaughtering. So therefore, Rita says, it's us, you might draw blood, you can't do it. Av mekartzvin, however, you could comb it a different way, that is, with a wooden comb with more like spaced out thick kind of teeth, which will not cause any bleeding, that's fine. We also have an opinion of the Chachamim Omrim, ein mekardin af lo mekartzvin. Not only can you not use the metal comb, you can't even use the wooden one. The Gemara will explain that they decree against the wooden combs, so that you shouldn't end up using the metal one. As they agree with Rabbi Yehuda, and they go even further. So where it begins by taking note of the Mishnah's language. It said, Elizabeth Nazari would take out his cow, like one single cow, with the strap between its horns on Shabbos. The Gemara wonders, remember the Elizabeth Nazari, Chad the Pora Abilite? You're telling me that that's all Elazar ben Azariah had, just that one cow? But how could that be? V'yomer Rav, Rav said, V'yomer Rav, Yehuda Rav, or is Yehuda the name of Rav? He describes the immense wealth of Elazar ben Azariah in these terms. Tleser alfe egle avim ma'aser Elazar ben Azariah mi'idre kol shosa v'shosa. When taking off the tithe, you know, 10% of the flock each new season, when we take one of every 10 animals and bring it as a carbon to the base of Migdash, so how many animals would Elazar ben Azariah tithe each season? 13,000. Which means that Elazar ben Azariah had the offspring from all of his livestock, 130,000. So the Gemara is asking, Elazar ben Azariah had much more than that one cow, so what does our Mishnah mean here? The Gemara answers, Tana lo shelo haisa. Not like the Mishnah gives you the impression that Elazar ben Azariah actually went out with his one animal to Rosh Hashanah with the strap between the horns. Rather, it was his neighbor's animal. His neighbor had this one cow. We take it out with the strap between its horns. So then what does the Mishnah mean when it seems to describe Paras, so his cow went out? The answer is Mitoch Shalom Michaba. Since he didn't say anything when his neighbor would take his animal out with the strap between its horns, Nikras El Shmo, the Mishnah calls it his, because Elazar ben Azariah, being the Morad the Aser, the one who has to instruct people how to do the halacha, has an obligation, if he sees somebody who's not following the halacha, to tell him this is not correct. The fact that he didn't say anything is the equivalent of Elazar ben Azariah himself going out, taking the animal, his own animal, with that strap. Apparently, he holds this is permitted. That's what the Mishnah means. So then we talked about combing the animal, whether that's permitted. So the Gemara brings a brisa about this. Tanur Rabbanan, the brisa says, Ezehu Kirud v'Ezehu Kirtzav. What's the case of Kirud, which according to the latter two opinions in the Mishnah, is prohibited v'Ezehu Kirtzav? What's the kind of combing of Kirtzav, which only the last opinion has a problem with? Rice explains, the Kirud kind of comb is a metal one with katanim, with these sharp, like thin teeth to the comb. So also chabura could cause to draw blood. And that's the issue where Yehuda says it's prohibited. Whereas Kirtzev, that kind of comb is a wooden one with gedolim, with big teeth. So enos and chabura, the point is it won't cause the animal to bleed. So you have no issue using that one, unless you're in the last opinion of the Mishnah, which prohibits even the wooden comb. So now the Gemara lays out all three opinions. Gimel Machlokes B'Dor, we have three opinions about the different combs combing the animal on Yom Tov. Yehuda Savar, Yehuda's opinion is that you cannot use the metal one. Since it's possible that you will draw blood with that, you can't do it, even though you have no intention. So it's what we call a Davar Sheinu Meschaven. I'm not intending to draw blood at all. I hope it doesn't happen. It holds still. Davar she'ina mischavin aser, the fact that you don't have intent doesn't make it permitted. You're still doing an act which has that consequence, so it's prohibited. Mihu, But Rabbi Yehuda acknowledges the kirud ketan abitzu chabura, although the metal one is an issue because it might draw blood, kirtzef, but the wooden one with the thicker gedolim, the thicker teeth, ain also chabura, it will not draw blood, so that's fine. Veloga's rina kirtzef adu kirud. We don't say you gotta ask for all kinds of combs, because if you permit one, you might permit the other. Now we don't make such a gzera. Whereas Virabon and Savri, last opinion of the Mishnah holds, Namik Rabbi Yehuda, they agree with Rabbi Yehuda that Damish in a Mitzchavin Aser, that first of all, even if you have no intent, it's still Aser. If it's a consequence of what you're doing, there's a real possibility of drawing the blood, it is prohibited. They go further and say, because Rinan Kirtzuf Atukir, even the wooden one is Aser, you have to make all kinds of combing Aser, because of the fact that with the metal comb it's Aser, so you got to decree in all cases. And finally, the first opinion in our Mishnah of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, who says you could even use the metal comb, even though you might end up drawing blood, the answer is, Savra Lakar Rav Shimon. He holds like the view of Rav Shimon, the Amar Davish, and a Mishav in Mutter, that if it's a case where you're doing Act A, that's all you're intending for. Now, possibly, consequence B might come from that. In our case, you might end up drawing the blood, but you have no intent for that, so then it's permitted, it's not a problem. The Torah, when it says you can't do malacha on Shabbos, was not referring to such a case. Therefore, main kirtzuf shar, even by the kir, the metal one, where there's a possibility that it will draw blood, it's okay, because you have no intent for that. Your only intention is to do the act of combing the animal. The Torah continues by ruling on this issue. Meravam, Rav Nachman, Rav Shmuel, Yemir La'or was said by Rav Nachman Lechudei himself. Nachman himself said, Halacha k'Rav Shimon. Halacha is like the view of Rav Shimon we just mentioned, that if there's no intent for that consequential act of what you're doing on Shabbos, it's not an issue. So why do we say here the Halacha is like Rav Shimon? What's the proof? Sha'arei Rav Elazar ben Azariah modelo. So we see Rav Elazar ben Azariah agrees with Rav Shimon. So therefore, that's a basis to say the halacha is like Rav Shimon. So the Gemara asks, what do you mean by this? Amalei Rav or Rav Nachman? How is that a proof? V'leima mar halacha k'Rabbi Yehuda. Say the opposite. Halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. Sha'arei chachamim modim lo. Because he has the chachamim, which is like the majority opinion, on his side. So what kind of proof is it here that because of Elazar ben Azariah goes like Rav Shimon, we should rule like Rav Shimon? Amalei, to which Rav Nachman answered, this is what it really meant. I know Rav Shimon's really. I concluded, based on my study of the issue, that Rav Shimon's position, that when there's no intent for that Act B, which might happen as a result of Act A, that the halacha is that's permitted, that was never prohibited on Shabbos. That is my conclusion to be the correct halacha. What I'm saying here is that that's further supported. We could bring more further credence to that view, because V'ot Sha'arei Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah modelo. We can like add an ally to Rav Shimon's view in Rav Elazar ben Azariah, so that gives a further weight to passing like this view. And in fact, this is the halacha in davar she'en mischavin. When you have, you're doing one thing, there's a potential consequence of an act which is a malacha, but as long as it's not for sure going to happen, and you have no intention for that consequential result, it's not prohibited on Shabbos. Turning over now to Chav Gimel and Bebez, we start a new Mishnah. We mentioned a pepper mill, a Rechayim Shal Pilpilin. So Mishnah discusses a different halachic aspect of the pepper mill, and it tells us like this. A Rechayim Shal Pilpilin, the pepper mill, is Tumea, susceptible to ritual Tuma, being a Kli, of course. Any utensil that has a function will be susceptible to ritual Tuma. So that means if, let's say, a dead sherets, like certain kind of creepy animals, or a corpse, or anything that generates tumah comes into contact with that, the utensil becomes tameh, would need to be immersed in the mikveh to purify it. She tells us, in the case of the pepper mill, it's tameh mishum shlosh kelim, meaning the pepper mill has three components, as will be described more. Each of these components, in and of themselves, would be susceptible to tumah. In other words, if you took this apart, you took the pepper mill apart, into its three components, each one individually would still be susceptible to Tumah, for they each have their own specific function, and therefore would continue to be susceptible to Tumah. Mishnah says, what are the three parts? Mishum Kli Kibol. You have the receptacle part that receives the ground-up pepper. Umishum kli mataches, then there's a metal component in the pepper mill, which, as we'll see, is the part that does the actual grinding, so that in and of itself has a function, therefore is susceptible to tama. And finally, mishum kli kvara, there's another component, the sieve part, so this is in the middle of the pepper mill, and serves to ensure that only the ground of pepper gets into that receptacle at the bottom, so that you don't have any other foreign substances getting in there. So this too is a kli in its own right, and therefore susceptible to tumah. And the Gemara describes a little more where each of these components is placed in the pepper mill. Tana, the Braisa, explains, Tachtona, the lowest component in the Rechem Shel Pilpul, in the pepper mill, Mishum Kli Kibul. That's where the receptacle part is that receives the ground of pepper. And Tzayis, the middle component, Mishum Kli Kvara. That's where the sieve-like piece is installed that makes sure that only the ground of pepper will go into the receptacle at the bottom. Now Rashi mentions an important rule in the laws of Tumah, which is that if you're talking about a utensil that's made out of wood, that will only be susceptible to Tumah if it has a receptacle. It has some kind of an interior which could hold something. So therefore, if you have a pepper mill whose sieve component is made from wood, you could argue that it shouldn't be susceptible to Tumah. Yet, it still will be, Rashi explains, because the Rabbanim made a gzera, like even though in a Torah, it wouldn't be susceptible to Tumah. However, since it's similar to a woven cloth, you have like a crisscross pattern in the wood, so therefore the Rabbanim said it still would be, there still would be Tumah, and certainly if it was made from metal, then regardless of whether it has a receptacle, it's for sure susceptible to Tumah, being that it has a specific function. Finally, the Gemara says, El Yonah, the uppermost component of the pepper mill, which Rashi explains is where the actual grinding occurs, this component too is susceptible to Tumah, Mishum Kli Mateches, because of the fact that it's made from metal. Rashi says, even if there's like a layer of wood there, but the main part is the metal part, therefore it will be susceptible to Tumah, as we explained. If something is made from metal, it doesn't need to have a receptacle. As long as it has some function, in this case being that it grinds up the pepper, it's going to be susceptible to Tumah. The next mission continues with another Tumah discussion. It talks about an Agala Shel Katan, a child's wagon. Rashi understands it means like a toy wagon that a child will play with. The Mishnah goes on to tell us that it has a full status of a kli. It's considered in halacha a utensil and therefore subject to all the laws that follow. Tosas, it should be noted, objects to Rashi's understanding. He says, like, if that's the case, it's simply a toy wagon of a child. Like, obviously, it's halachically considered a utensil. So Tosas therefore understands that it's not an actual toy wagon. Rather, it's a type of like a walker for a little child, like to help him train to learn how to walk. So that's what the Mishnah is discussing here. Either way, the Mishnah tells us the halacha of this child's wagon is it's Tumeya Midras. It has the Tumah called Tumas Midras, which means that certain people who have a severe level of Tumah, like for example a Zav or a Nida, they have a unique halacha of Tumah, which is if they lie or sit on something, even if they don't come directly into contact with it, will make that thing Tumah. However, that only happens if you're dealing with an item that's meant to be reclined on. So the Mishnah tells us, first of all, that this child's wagon would be subject to this Tumah of Tumas Midras, where it says Zav reclines on it, because if you go with Rashi's understanding, the Katan sits in there, he plays with it. So if you had a case where this child became a Zav, Rashi says, would make this toy wagon Tumah if he rode on that. Careful reading of Rashi suggests that it's only true vis-a-vis the cotton, whereas an adult Zav who sat on it wouldn't make a tummy. That's what Rashi's language seems to say. Further, the Mishnah says, regarding this child's wagon, Nitelis b'Shabbos, it can be moved on Shabbos. It isn't Muktza. Once again, because it is defined halachically as a utensil, being that it's a utensil, it won't be Muktza on Shabbos. The general rule is, anything that's defined halachically as a kli will not have a muktzah status. Another halacha about this child's wagon is ve'ena nigreres el al gabi kelim. As far as pulling the wagon along the dirt ground, can only be done if there are kelim, meaning some kind of fabric on top of the ground. You can't pull the wagon directly on the ground. The issue is, wheels would be creating tracks, depressions in the ground as it moves along, and there is a malach and Shabbos of plowing the earth. So that's what's happening as you push this wagon with the wheels over the ground. So therefore, says the first opinion of the Mishnah, it's not allowed unless you have some kind of a fabric on top of the ground over which you can pull along the wagon. But the Mishnah continues, that's according to the first opinion. However, of Yehuda Omer, Yehuda says, although it's true that kol hakelim, like other kinds of utensils, like the well-known case is the bench, for example, ein nigrarin, can't be dragged across the dirt ground because of this issue that you're creating depressions in the ground. It's like plowing in the ground. That's true by other utensils and things. Chutz mina agolo. But this case of the wagon that is on wheels is not a problem, says Rabbi Yehuda, mipneshi koveshes, because it's not really digging in the ground. Digging in the ground means you're removing dirt from the ground to create, let's say, a ditch. Here, though, what's happening is that the wheels, as they move along, are pressing down on the ground, are packing down the earth, and that, Rabbi Yehuda says, is not a melach of chersh, of plowing at all, so there's no issue. We'll see more about all this in the Gemara. The Gemara begins by explaining the first halach of the Mishnah, that this child's wagon is a tmeya midras. If the child, for example, was a zav, he has that severe level of tumah, then his sitting on the kli will make a tummy, even if he didn't come into direct contact with it. So the Gemara explains, agol shel katan tmeya midras, da samech luya. For since the child uses it to lean on, he plays in this wagon, so it's there for a kli whose designated use is for sitting in, for leaning on, sitting in. Therefore, it's subject to the halacha of tumas midras, that if a zav sits on that, it'll become tameh. Then Mishnah said, "You tell us b'Shabbos it's not muktzah." Gemara explains, "Mishum de'ikat toras kli ala." Because in general, the antithesis of muktzah is if something has a status of a kli, meaning it has a defined function, then it is prepared for Shabbos. It's not going to be in the category of muktzah, which would preclude being able to handle it on Shabbos. It's not a problem. It could be handled on Shabbos. Then the Mishnah said the issue of the fact that the wagon could create ditches in the dirt ground. Therefore, you have to have spread some kind of a fabric over the ground over which to pull along the wagon. So the Gemara explains, Agabi Kalim in. Clearly, the Mishnah is telling us you have to have something spread over the ground. Then you could pull the wagon along, Agabi Karkalo, but directly on the ground, you cannot. So the Gemara explains, My Taima, what's the reason? As we said, Dika Avid Charitz, because you're creating a charitz in the ground, you're making ditches. As the wagon moves along, it makes tracks, there's ditches, which is a malacha, that's the issue. So the Gemara explains, Mani, which Tanaic opinion does our Mishnah follow here? Rabbi Yehuda hi. It's going like the Tanaic opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. Amar, who says, as we saw above, that in the case of a davar she'ein meschavin, you're doing action A, that's all you have intention to do, and possibly from action A might come action B, which is a malacha. Yehuda's opinion is, in spite of the fact that you had no intention for result B, it's still usar on Shabbos. Mar says, the first opinion, our Mishnah has to be going like Rabbi Yehuda. Why? The ear of Shimon, because of our Mishnah, the first opinion our Mishnah agreed with Rabbi Shimon, then it wouldn't make sense that there's any problem with dragging the wagon over the dirt. For what does Rabbi Shimon hold? Ha'amar davarsh ein meschavin. That if you have no intention for that possible result, mutter, it's permitted. So in our case, therefore, as we'll explain, there should be no problem with dragging the wagon over the dirt ground. So it must be in the opinion of Rav Yehuda. Before we explain this, let's just see the source case of Rav Shimon de Tanya. It says in the Braisa, Omer Shimon says, Gorer adam mita kise v'sav, so it's permitted to drag like a small bed, a chair, or a bench through the dirt on Shabbos, even though that might possibly create a ditch in the ground, it's permitted. As long as, of course, your intention is not to make that charitz, that ditch in the ground, it's permitted. Meaning the case over there is that it's not inevitable that dragging the bench across the dirt will create ditches in the ground. It might happen. Shimon holds, since you have no intention for that, your intention is only to be dragging this bench from point A to point B, you have no care or interest in the ditches that may result, it's permitted, it's not a problem on Shabbos. So how does that apply in our case? The Gemara means like this. Everyone agrees to the point made at the end of our Mishnah that the wagon that's on wheels shouldn't really be a problem of making ditches, for when it makes its tracks, it's not that it's removing dirt from the ground, it's simply pressing the ground down, which has nothing to do with the malacha of plowing on Shabbos. The reason there still might be a problem is because it's possible that those wheels will pick up some dirt as it moves across the ground. So we're dealing with the situation of a davar sheinu mischavin once again. That is, your kavana, your intention is just to pull the wagon across the ground. Possibly that might result in a malacha, it might take some dirt with it. So the Gemara says, the fact that the first opinion our Mishnah says it is a problem shows us this opinion is not going like Rav Shimon. Rav Shimon would say it's perfectly fine, you have no intention, and it won't necessarily happen. Must be the first opinion follows of Yehuda, that even though you didn't have intention for that possible result, it still remains prohibited. So now that we've established that the first opinion follows Rabbi Yehuda, aim a Seifa, let's read the Seifa now. In the Seifa, Rabbi Yehuda makes an appearance, meaning in the arguing opinion, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Yehuda says in the Seifa that Ein HaKol Nigrarin B'Shabbos, it's true other things can't be dragged across the ground Shabbos, Chutz Min HaGola, with this child's wagon is not a problem. Mipneshi Koiveshes, so it's not actually picking up dirt, it's just pressing the dirt down. So clearly here, what is Rabbi Yehuda saying? Mipnei koveshes, and all it does is it presses the dirt down. Havacharitz loyavda. Rabbi Yehuda here is saying that we're not worried about it might make a ditch, it might remove some dirt. That event is so improbable that the wagon will actually take some dirt with it, that even according to my opinion, that when there's no intention, it's still an issue on Shabbos. But in this case, it's so unlikely that it's not a problem. The question is, I thought the Tanakhama we established is going like Rabbi Yehuda did say that we have an issue over here. You can't pull the wagon directly on the ground because of the possibility that it might take dirt with it. So is it an issue or not? Are we choshesh? Do we worry about the wagon taking some dirt with it or not? Tanakhama has Rabbi Yehuda saying one thing, and then the Mishnah presents Rabbi Yehuda saying otherwise. So the Gemara answers, Trei Tanai Ve'aliba de Rebbe Yehuda. What's going on in our Mishnah is that there is a disagreement within Rebbe Yehuda's opinion, meaning, what does Rebbe Yehuda hold in this case? According to Tanakhama, Rebbe Yehuda would say it is a problem. Tanakhama feels that the likelihood that the wagon will actually pick up some dirt with it is enough to be concerned about that. And therefore, since even when it's davar sheinu mischavin, even when you lack intention for that, it's still us, or according to Yehuda, it's going to be a problem. You've got to put something down to pull the wagon over. Then we have in the Mishnah a different understanding of Rav Yehuda, that even according to him, there's no issue over here because the likelihood of the wagon taking dirt with it is so low that it's not an issue at all. And if you can go ahead and drag the wagon directly on the dirt ground, there is no problem.
This concludes the second parak of Masechtas Beitza, which was dedicated by Rabbi Danny Goldstein, Le'ilei Nishmas, his parents, Tzivia Trina Bas David, and Yaakov Ben Meir. May the schos of Liman Atar from this parak of Shas provide an everlasting aliyah for the neshamos.
You've been listening to RealClearDaf.com. Visit us online for resources or to dedicate a shiur. To speak with Rabbi Wise, call 855-ASK-RCD1. That's 855-275-7231.